Falcoholic Podcast listeners, welcome to another episode of the Falcoholic Live. This is your host, Kevin Knight, reminding you to check out the show live on YouTube on Wednesday nights at 8:10 p.m. Eastern. We also encourage you to check out our Patreon page, where you can unlock exclusive perks, including access to a patron Q&A session where we take Falcons questions for about 30 minutes to an hour. That's a lot of fun. You can find that page at patreon.com/falcoholiclive. Thank you all for listening, and we hope you enjoy today's episode. Fellow Falcoholics, what is up? Welcome to episode 155 of the Falcoholic Live. I'm your host, Kevin Knight, joined by two excellent guests, and we'll have even more, including a very special one, coming on here shortly. But first of all, want to welcome in Eric Robinson. You see him on your screen there. He is at @_Eric_Robinson. Eric, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing pretty well, man. I'm glad to be here to talk a little football, a little Falcons football.
Absolutely. Yeah, we got obviously a lot to talk about. Also with us tonight, we have our director of guest personnel, and he's the one you can thank for our very special guest joining us later this evening. He is Evan Birchfield at Evan Birchfield on Twitter. Evan, how are you doing?
I am good, Kevin, but I am also tired. It's been a day.
It has been a day. It's been a busy one, a very busy one out there on them internets. So, yeah, guys, well, as you know, the Falcons did release their initial 53-man roster on Tuesday, and then today we saw a couple, a single waiver claim, I guess, and then also the practice squad forming. So we're going to break all of that down, and then we also will be having legendary Falcons kicker Morten Anderson joining the show whenever he's able to get on, and we don't know exactly how long he'll be able to hang out, but we'll have him here for a bit, so you guys have that to look forward to as well. And then now we have joining us Adnan Ekic as well. Adnan, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. How about you guys?
Good.
Good, man.
All right. So obviously, lots to talk about with the initial roster. Also, some injury news and some surprising cut today. So let's just start with our most surprising cut. Person who didn't make the 53-man roster that we were surprised by. So, Eric, I'll let you take the first crack at this. Who was the most, like, surprising cut for you?
Oh, man. I'll probably say Caleb Huntley was the most surprising one. I think he was the most consistent running back of the entire preseason, and you know, he was the closest thing to that speed element that this running back group lacks at this point. Mm-hmm. And even though he's back on the practice squad, just seeing him not make the initial roster was a surprise, which means they're going to roll. Going to roll with three running backs, well, two technically, and then whatever you want to label Cordarrelle Patterson, and they're going to roll with a fullback, Keith Smith, which is interesting because a fullback is not really a staple in an Arthur Smith offensive scheme.
Yeah, so, yeah, it's like 10 – I think he uses it like 9-10% of plays.
Yeah, it's used a lot less than from what, you know, Kyle Shanahan uses a fullback. So it's interesting to see Smith kept on board, but Huntley, who was definitely the better playmaker, the better runner, and has the better ability between the two, is kind of interesting to see Smith make the roster and Huntley, you know, kind of sort of get put on the practice squad, get put on the back burner a little bit. But that was probably the most surprising.
Yeah, that's definitely a good one. That's definitely one I had for me written down as well. Evan, I'll let you get the next crack at it. Who was a surprising cut for you?
Definitely have to agree that Huntley for me was the biggest one. But if I had to pick a second one, I would say pretty much any of the tight ends. I think a lot of us, probably everybody in the chat too, probably thought they'd keep four tight ends. They ended up just keeping three currently. So Parker Hesse, David Wells, and John Rain, who kind of played fullback in a pinch. He had a lot of position flexibility, was also cut. John Rain and Is John Rain the only tight end that made it on the practice squad? He's still around. Yeah. I know that, but Parker Hesse. Yeah. I thought.
Oh yeah,
I thought
David Wells.
One of them was.
And David Wells is also on the practice squad.
David Wells made it too.
Right, and I think I want to say Hesse was waived with an injury designation or something. But yeah, so seeing that they're only keeping three tight ends, that was pretty much the more surprising move. I mean, aside from Huntley.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. Yeah, Adnan, did you have a surprising cut you saw?
I was surprised that Willie Beavers got cut. I definitely thought that he would be someone who would be a depth piece on the offensive line. He's someone that was actually, for a time period, running with the first teamers, if I'm not mistaken, early on when Caleb McGarry was out with an ailment. So I wasn't expecting Willie Beavers to be like a big, big-time contributor, but to not even make it to the initial roster was a little bit surprising to me, just given the lack of depth that we have when it comes to our tackles with Matt Gono out for a period of time.
Yeah, that's another good one. I mean, I was surprised that he ended up getting cut and surprised that they're only keeping, I think, 8 offensive linemen on the roster. I figured they'd keep 9. But again, with the new practice squad rules where you can elevate 2 guys, you know, it makes it, you have a little bit more flexibility in terms of injuries. I mean, you guys took all the obvious ones. So I guess I did think that Chris Williamson might make the roster, as the final cornerback over someone like Kendall Sheffield, who we hadn't really seen at all. The team did elect to keep Sheffield and TJ Green, who they list both Sheffield and TJ Green as kind of like defensive backs, so like safety corner hybrid types. So that was surprising to me to see Sheffield get the nod over Williamson, because Sheffield hasn't even played at all the preseason.
I don't understand the Sheffield move. I don't understand if they're thinking about possibly moving him to safety. I'm not on board with that. The biggest thing with this guy is, you know, awareness.
Yeah.
Game awareness. And there are times where he just looks lost, and I don't want him back there with that type of assignment. If he can't even, he has trouble, you know, tracking the ball as a corner, let alone a single high safety. I don't get the move. I wonder if it's because of the fact that they had to put him on. Like, I don't know if it's a situation where they had to keep him because he was going to be designated for IR because of injury. If that might have been, I don't know.
That could be it. Yeah,
that probably is. I would hope that's it. I'm honestly not hoping that they kept him here because of his skill set. Because he's not good.
I mean, it's always the traits with him. I mean, he's got those elite athletic traits, and I guess that's it. Yeah, but he is big. You know, he's like 200 pounds as a corner. You know, 5'11", so he's got some size to him and all this. But yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I don't think when he's been on the field, it's been good enough. But yeah, I mean, I think you might be right that it was sort of a move to have him be able to possibly come back from IR. And to kind of have control basically over his situation going forward. But yeah, definitely that the number of defensive backs is a surprising thing we'll talk about as well. But yeah, I mean, just to run it down, the roster, I think the actual roster wasn't that surprising. You know, there were a couple of notable things. So the first one would be that the team actually kept all 3 quarterbacks on the roster. And, you know, I don't know if this is a permanent thing or if they're just sort of going to wait and see if maybe they're going to stash one on the squad later or whatnot. But Adna, what do you think about the team choosing to keep both Rosen and Felipe Franks on the active roster?
I was actually surprised. I definitely thought that it would be a situation where Felipe Franks would go revert to the practice squad. I think Rosen definitely beat him out in that last preseason game. And just given the sheer talent, Rosen was always a better option than Felipe Franks to be the team's backup quarterback. This does tell me that the Falcons were probably weary about someone picking up Felipe Franks off waivers after cutting him, because I don't see any other reason why they would have the right. three quarterbacks. So that's the only thing I can bring out of this, that they like Felipe Franks enough to where they really want to keep him around. And that's definitely fair given what we've seen the past couple of months in training camp and the preseason. He's definitely someone that you want to keep on your team and your franchise in one form or another. But I think they probably, you know, maybe heard some rumblings or maybe just out of a hunch, they didn't want to take the risk of Felipe Franks getting claimed by someone else. So yeah, it's surprising that they kept three quarterbacks, but not really when you consider that fact.
Yeah, I agree.
I to piggyback on that, you know, it may be a situation where, because I'm pretty sure they hear a lot of chatter around the league about teams that actually want to keep an extra quarterback on a roster because of, you know, because of COVID situations, you know, and that might be a thing around the league where teams are kind of bending, you know, the rules, well, not bending the rules, but kind of going, you know, against the grain a little bit and saying, hey, we want to keep three on the roster because, you know, with what we saw last year with COVID and quarterbacks, it wasn't great, and maybe teams are weary of that, and like Adnan said, like it may be a situation like if Felipe would have hit that waiver market, mm-hmm. somebody would have snatched them up real quick.
I definitely think it would be smart and proactive of the team to not have all three quarterbacks in the same place at the same time, just because of, you know, COVID. And everyone on this team, of course, you know, is vaccinated, which is a commendable thing for the Atlanta Falcons. But still, COVID rules, you can still, you know, get it. And we're not going to go into vaccinations, non-vaccinations, but you're still not allowed to play or practice until you have back-to-back negative tests with COVID. What the Eagles did last year with Josh McCown, they actually had Josh McCown isolate at home, and they paid him a weekly sum to be their emergency quarterback in case there was a COVID outbreak in their quarterback room. So I definitely think that the Falcons may do something similar where they possibly keep Felipe Franks separate from Matt Ryan and Josh Rosen throughout the course of the season.
That makes sense. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. Yeah, I agree. That's interesting. And like, we didn't get to see like a ton of Josh Rosen, obviously, with him only here for this last game. But, you know, he was definitely more comfortable throwing the football, which is probably more important.
That touchdown was a highlight reel play. Pat Mahomes throws that touchdown, it's top. It's on the top 10 on ESPN, like, the next day.
Off the back foot, kind of sort of back.
It was a laser.
Kind of drifting away, and it just went right into the breadbasket, man. Again, what you saw from him was the result of what, 2-3 days worth of practice?
Right. Yeah.
Not many days getting chemistry with these receivers. Not many days soaking in the offense. And you got to also keep in mind, like, he played with the bottom of the barrel when it came to talent, and he looked pretty decent, man. If it wasn't for think of number 75. If it wasn't for him, Rosen might have had a couple touchdown passes, to be quite honest with you. But that night was kind of ruined because of the left tackle play. But yeah, that was impressive, man. I really like what I saw.
Yeah. And, you know, clearly he had the talent to be drafted in the first round. You know, it's been sort of a cavalcade of errors that have led to him, you know, basically being an inch from being out of the NFL, and I don't think he's like the future quarterback in Atlanta or anything like that. But as a, you know, a backup, a spot starter, he still could be that. But we need to see. We need to see if he can, you know, do it and if he can continue. But
I like his option better than AJ McCarron. I'm sorry. Just for backup purposes.
Yeah.
I'd rather rely on him.
We know, and just talking about Josh Rosen for a second, we were all big fans of Josh Rosen during the 2018 draft show. Yeah. Admittedly, and this was a mistake on my end, I liked him more than Josh Allen. I know Kevin had him as his top quarterback as well.
that's fine. That wasn't at that point in time. That was not a bad opinion.
No,
at all.
It wasn't.
There
was
some people who compared him to like Aaron Rodgers. So right. Yeah, I don't think anything's crazy.
Yeah, like he went top 10. He was a big time quarterback. I think there have been some issues, and this is just speculation on my end. Maybe some issues like off the field. I know he got cut from Tampa Bay for complaining about not having enough snaps. Yep. And I'm not saying that Josh Rosen is going to be a future franchise starter. But one thing that I did really like was that there does seem to be a bit of an attitude change with him, and that's just judging by the press conference that we've seen after that game. He seems to have really humbled himself a little bit. Yeah. And, you know, he knows that this is probably his last chance in the NFL. I think this is his fourth team. Even as a former top 10 pick as a quarterback, you know, you don't have these unlimited opportunities in the National Football League. It's a league that will drop you at the first sign of inconvenience and move on without you. And, you know, I think he's understanding that a little bit. And I definitely think it'll serve him very well for prolonging his career either as a backup or, you know, maybe he even carves out a starting role somewhere eventually down the line, because he definitely does have the physical talent for it.
He's only 24. And I think, I honestly believe that, you know, is he the future for the Falcons? No, I'm not saying that. But I think right now, I think he's good enough right now to be a capable number two. And I still believe he's underdeveloped. He's only 24. He only has 20 career starts. He only had, this is his fifth team, but he's really had, what, maybe one training camp with every team? And you can't even count this one with the Falcons, because that was only like three practices. So I feel like he's being casted off as a bust way too soon. I don't think the guy has really had enough time in the league to develop and form and become an NFL quarterback. Again, he only had 20 starts. The situation in Arizona, he wasn't like he had no chance there, because they brought in Cliff Kingsbury, and Cliff Kingsbury had his eyes on one guy and one guy only. It was Kyler Murray. You went to Tampa. There's no way in hell he was going to play in Tampa. He's playing behind Tom Brady. Like, let's just be quite honest here. Mm-hmm. Went to San Francisco. His day was done the moment that they drafted Trey Lance. Like, it was a wrap at that point.
Yeah.
So I felt like he didn't even really have a favorable situation for him to walk into and say, all right, I'm able to develop and establish myself here. I think there's still enough room for him to grow and mature. And at like Adam pointed out, maturity was a real issue with him early on in his career. And it rubbed a lot of teams the wrong way. But I think he can definitely grow into a capable number two behind Matt Ryan.
Yeah, I agree. I'm interested to see where it goes and if he can pan out, because he has a chance certainly to stick around as a long-term backup here. There's obviously no one entrenched. So it's good. You know, I think it's a good situation for him to be in. I think it's good for the Falcons to have someone with upside potentially in the building. And Franks is there too as sort of the really long-term developmental guy. We just don't really know.
Franks has, he's shown enough, in my opinion, to be worthy of, you know, being on a roster and being developed as well. Is he the long-term answer? I don't think any of us can answer that question, but
I think we've
seen enough from him to say, all right, he's good enough to kind of stick around. Let's see what we got there.
Yeah. By the way,
are you guys having a fantasy draft right now?
Yeah. For the Patriot League. Yeah.
What, you guys schedule that for right now?
No, it's a 2-hour per pick draft. Yeah. So we pause it at night. Yeah. So it's kind of constantly going on. Yeah.
Well, thank you for reminding me, because it's on me right now. I got
it. Oh, yeah. Good. Yeah. Get to it.
It started and I was unaware. So it auto picked me Dak and Saquon with the first two picks.
Wait, is it a super flex?
Yeah.
Okay. I was going to say, because Dak in the first round isn't.
Oh, sorry, I had it flipped. Yeah. It was stacked in the second, but still.
Yeah, it is Superflex, yeah. So make you guys play, you know, Superflex with me. So that's what I get to do. I'm the host. I get to decide what the league rules are. But yeah, big shout out to the patrons. That's fun. And also shout out to Nico, by the way, who just became a patron. Thank you, Nico. We appreciate you, man.
I was reading the chat and like this fantasy draft. Like, there's no way you schedule this draft at like 8:10 on Wednesday.
Exactly
night.
At 8:10. It's taking place during the show.
That would be so much fun, though. Just
I will
make
be
it
commenting on it. Yeah, like during the live show, 90 seconds per pick only.
Mm-hmm. It's like Eric's pick. Eric, tell us about Josh Rosen. You're on the talk, and you have 2 minutes.
Thank you for reminding me. Also, draft at the same time. Yeah, guys. Yeah, let's see. Let me see another position that was interesting to me would be running back. Like we talked about it earlier with Caleb Huntley not making it, they kept only 3. So that means that Cordarrelle Patterson is probably going to have a pretty significant role there. Yeah, I mean, that one's interesting. Also, wide receiver, where they kept 6. They kept both Christian Blake and Frank Darby. I assume Blake is probably going to be the one who actually plays. Darby's kind of maybe going to be a game day and active most weeks. But, yeah, you guys have any notable position groups or any notable players that ended up making it that were surprising or interesting to you guys?
I think it's interesting that Cordarrelle Patterson is listed on the team's official depth chart as a running back, and he's listed as the running back 2.
Interesting.
That's interesting. Yeah.
We did see Quadri Allison play in this past preseason game, and not as a starter either.
Right.
Like he was. It wouldn't shock me if we went into week one and we are watching a full-blown running back by committee with Mike Davis handling the early downs, Cordarrelle Patterson handling the passing downs, and then Quadri Allison possibly being that red zone running back. I know that's something that Mike Davis fantasy owners don't want to hear at all across the internet. But right. Mike Davis is also someone who, you know, he's been a career backup, and last year when he did get that big starting opportunity with Christian McCaffrey out with the Panthers, he kind of broke down and got a bit tired toward the end of the season. So it wouldn't surprise me if Arthur Smith saw that and is, you know, trying to keep him a bit fresh for the entire year by lightening his workload from the start. I don't think that Mike Davis is going to go out there and be a 3-down back.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it seems like they're going to play him a lot. You know, I agree. Like, I mean, he was absolutely a workhorse for the Panthers last year when he had to be. But yeah, I mean, I agree that he, it's probably better to work it in a rotation. But I'm interested to see how much Cordarrelle Patterson does play at running back and if he's effective there, because it was, I guess I would say, not great in Chicago with him as a running back. It seems like the Bears didn't really use him super well. So yeah, I mean, I just don't really know what to expect there, but I'm excited to see Patterson as a running back. Maybe Arthur Smith can use him a little bit more effectively. And then for me, the Blake versus Darby competition ended up being Blake and Darby. What do you guys think about that?
I think they just wanted to keep
Darby around. They didn't really want to cut him, but I think he'll probably be inactive. Yeah.
I think Chris Rowland outplayed both of them.
I mean, he had a couple drops, but he did have some impressive plays as well. But it's like, I don't know if they feel like, you know, if he wasn't going to be the returner, they didn't need him or something. But, you know, I know Blake has the chemistry with Ryan, allegedly, is why they like Blake so much.
How long has he been around?
Christian Blake?
3 years.
Yeah, this is
3 years now.
Yeah, he was in that original great wide receiver competition with Olamide Zaccheaus a couple of years ago, which Zaccheaus ultimately ended up winning out.
Yeah.
So, and he played in that San Francisco game where the Falcons beat Kyle Shanahan at the very like end of the game to ruin our draft pick.
They must really like him. Really like him. I don't see enough. And I don't know.
I wouldn't be shocked if they pick up another receiver at some point, too.
Yeah, I mean, he's fine as a wide receiver 6.
Yeah. But
well, if he's that far down, like, I don't see – if he's a wide receiver 6 and Chris Rowland's on the outside looking in, I'm rolling with Chris Rowland. Like, I'm going with him. I feel he's the better asset to the team. I think he's actually listed as like the wide receiver four. Wow. I think he's listed above Tajae Sharpe as well on the team's depth chart. So
yeah, I don't get that. I think Sharpe definitely outplayed him, but
yeah, right. But we'll see. Yeah, he's listed second behind Calvin Ridley. So
that's weird.
Yeah.
Weird one. Yep.
Yeah, they must.
You know, I don't trust the depth chart at all. That's definitely part of it.
No, I don't either. It's gonna change. But just a quick snapshot of it right now. That's where they have him listed.
Yeah, I definitely think the history with Matt Ryan and the chemistry with Ryan, and Ryan probably maybe even went to bat for him a little bit, definitely helped. Tajae Sharpe, he knows Arthur Smith's playbook. He was in that Titans offense. I think at least at the very beginning, Sharp is going to be a bigger part of this offense than Blake and definitely than Darby, just because of his knowledge within this playbook.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Sharp is definitely, I think, going to be a contributor. You could tell he looked comfortable immediately when he was working in, more so than any of the other sort of undrafted guys or the other, depth guys that he was playing with. So that was definitely an interesting one. I know folks are asking about the offensive line. So yes, let's talk about the offensive line because there's going to be some movement there today with the news that, so first of all, they kept only eight. So they kept Josh Andrews, Drew Dahlman, Jason Spriggs as these sort of, I guess not depth guys. I guess I'm saying that now, but those were kind of the depth guys. And then they have obviously the starters being Matt Hennessy, Caleb McGarry, Jake Matthews, Chris Lindstrom, and then either Jalen Mayfield or Josh Andrews at left guard. But it appears that it's now going to be Jalen Mayfield at left guard because Josh Andrews is going on IR. So, and we may have our special guest joining us right now. Let's check it out. Hey.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Morton. Can you hear us okay?
Yeah, let me...
Oh, there we
go.
Guys.
There he is.
Hey. How you doing?
Good, man. What's going on? I totally just got back from Baltimore, so I kind of forgot about it. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah. No problem. No, we can talk for literally forever. So you were good to come in basically whenever you wanted to. And you're welcome to pop out whenever you're done as well. So.
Okay, man. Sounds good. How are you guys doing tonight?
We're good. We're good. Just talking, Yep, that's the plan. And then breaking down the roster that just was released. And
I haven't seen it, so I'm not going to be a lot of help there.
That's okay. We can, we'll be informing you of the roster as well at this time.
Yeah, let me know.
Yeah, guys. Well, if anyone has questions for Morton, you guys can throw those in the chat. If any of you guys, other co-hosts, have questions as well, I know we had some from Patreon. Feel free. I know Evan will because he's our resident kicking consultant. So I know he's chomping at the bit right now. So,
well, yeah, I'm glad you're here, Morton. I've had the pleasure of interviewing you twice before, so I've gotten to talk to you pretty good. Just how's life going right now? A lot of fans in the chat, we're excited to have you on. So.
Things are wonderful. I just got back from doing an NFL network piece in Baltimore with Justin Tucker, who, in my opinion, probably is the best one out there right now.
He's
the most accurate kicker in the history of the game with a minimum of 100 attempts, and he's won a lot of games. Big kicks, long kicks. He's the only guy in the history of the game that in one game hit a 20, a 30, a 40, a 50, and a 60.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool. That one's hard to, wrap your head around, but he did it. And so we had a good time. We're doing a piece that's going to air on Thursday Night Football in week 10 prior to the Ravens playing on Thursday Night Football on NFL Network. So should be a nice little content piece for the fans.
Yeah, I'll have to check that out. That sounds good. Sounds exciting.
And big Baltimore fan. I got to say, I think Baltimore gets a bad rap.
Yeah, the city?
Yeah, the city of Baltimore, I think, really gets the shaft when it comes to the vibe. And I know there was some social issues, obviously, that polarized that. But being there one-on-one with the people, super nice, great, you know, a state in the inner harbor. So maybe this is a tainted view of Baltimore. But nevertheless, great vibe. And the Ravens facility is like a country club. Holy cow.
Yeah, I've seen pictures of it. It seems really nice. Now,
mind-blowing place.
Do they all say hun? I heard that people say hun a lot in Baltimore.
I didn't get any of that.
Oh, okay.
It's probably a good thing.
Yeah. I heard that was like a Baltimore thing, but I've never actually been there. But now I'll have to add it to the list. It's an underrated city, apparently, per Morton. So, yeah, guys, you get that inside info on the
crab
NFL
cakes,
cities
you know,
as well.
A lot of crab cakes. Went to Jimmy's for seafood, ordered a bunch of blue crabs, and had them shipped back to Atlanta. So we're going to have blue crabs tomorrow.
All right. That sounds
good.
That'd
be awesome.
Man, that's reminding me I haven't had dinner yet. Oh, no.
I ordered a bushel of blue crabs thinking, oh, you know, it's, I don't know, 24, 36. It's apparently six dozen.
Oh, well, okay, so party at Morton's house, right?
Oh, party at Morton's house. That's right.
They've been on a little detour through Hurricane Ida, so they're finally getting here tomorrow. They're on dry ice, and we hope they get here safely. Well-traveled crabs, what can I say?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, guys, if you have questions, I know. Yeah, go for it.
One question I have, 25 years in the league, you know, Pro Football Hall of Famer. What is the one thing about the game you miss? I mean, I know you departed from the game about close to a decade and a half ago, and I know the game has changed a lot for you. Has changed a lot since then. But I'm pretty sure there's, with you being the competitor that you are, I'm pretty sure there's one thing about the game that you really miss a lot.
Well, the bright lights Sunday afternoon, Monday night, Thursday night.
Oh, okay.
The game, you know, the moments. That's probably, well, the biggest thing I miss, the biggest element is that the relationships with the guys, the locker room.
Right.
It really is. I mean, it's a very special bond. It's, it's 53 guys pulling in the same direction, or at least attempting to pull in the same direction and trying to make sense of it all. Guys from all kinds of backgrounds and cultures and race and, it's a kaleidoscope. It's a wild ride. And the team that makes more sense of it, the quicker, they're better off, right? So people that get the harmony, but also find an edge. And I think to that point in '98, when we were really good and we went to the Super Bowl, we had harmony, but we also had an edge. We had an edge that we had some leaders, some alpha dogs, and there was a lot of accountability there. You know, there was a lot of guys that didn't take any shit, that didn't, you know, wouldn't put up with people phoning it in. It was a very intense environment. It was very fun. Mm-hmm. We worked hard. We played hard. And we had a really good head coach in Dan Reeves, who had played, obviously, a player's coach from Dallas, tight end. You know, should be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. I'm not sure why he's not yet, but hopefully he will be. We just had a really good run with guys that were accountable to each other and who would not accept anybody. And no, there was no weak link. And if there was a weak link, we would handle it internally, quickly.
One more thing. When it comes to kickers in the NFL, collectively they definitely get a bad rap as well. I mean, you hear about it a lot.
Well, we just don't get enough cred. We don't get enough street cred. I mean, that's really what it is. I don't know if it's a bad rap.
I mean, it's more so like, hey, they're there for one thing and one thing only, which they are. But I mean, hey, a lot of the brunt of a loss will fall on the lap of the kicker if it's a situation where he missed the field goal late. But why do you feel that is the case when it comes?
Well, allow me to retort. Allow me to present a scenario where maybe if a receiver caught a pass on third down when we needed a first down to move the chains, but he didn't catch it, now we have to punt and we lose a possession. That's a possession where we could have scored.
Yeah.
There's a new, maybe you're an edge rusher and you get blocked and you can't get to the quarterback and you don't sack him or you don't pressure him, so he throws a bad an incompletion or or a pick, even better, or maybe he fumbles, you scoop and score and make it a big play for you. There's any number of plays by any number of players on a football team that randomly can affect a football game. So to be ignorant, I'm not saying you're ignorant, but to, I'm saying in general now, the perspective, the sense that the kicker is somehow different than the rest of the team.
Yeah,
I understand we're not an every down player, but we're specialists and we're meant to be inserted in perceived pressure situations to affect the game positively. Sometimes that doesn't happen, but ask any player who's played the game at the highest level if they've affected the game negatively and positively, and you'll get the response both ways. It's just more polarizing when we're out there because we have a finite amount of chances, may have 12 chances a game to affect the game. And every down player might play 75 snaps, 70 snaps, you know. Is the standard different for those players than us? I mean, I would welcome – I just spent time with Justin. Justin is making 9 out of 10 field goals, okay, in 9 years of work.
Yeah.
Can you name me any player who's grading 90% 9 out of 10 years, a receiver that's catching the ball 9 out of 10 times, a running back?
Yeah.
You know, my point, you get my point.
Yeah, yeah.
Why is the standard for kickers different? Why are we changing the rules all the time for kickers just because we're getting better? Answer that.
Right. It's like the field goal percentage has never been higher. I mean, you talk about your field goal percentage, which was excellent, obviously. And then you got guys today.
Mediocre looking at
if you compare it to today, 7.98,
which right now is 10% lower than Justin.
Right.
It's mind blowing.
Yeah, I mean, so definitely things change over time, but I think you hit the nail on the head with kickers, it's not that they play like more, I mean, they do play less snaps, but it's just more visible to, I think, the average fan. Like if a kicker messes up, it's one play that they can easily process. Where if an offensive lineman, you know, they might have to watch 75 snaps and see, you know, 50 wins and a couple losses and a couple stalemates, but it's, you know, it's so magnified.
I think a good example would be a shutdown corner. Okay. A guy that's asked to one-on-one go up against the best receiver on the opposing team. And can he shut that guy down? And what's his success rate against that guy? You know, that's on an island similar to a kicker. I mean, we're still depending. That cornerback is depending on a pass rush, on people, you know, because he's going to be in man, obviously.
Yeah.
And a kicker's depending on a good snap, a good hold, and good protection, and then it's obviously up to him. So I would say that, like, I guess a cornerback who's asked to play man a lot would be like, you know, Deion Sanders, who was probably one of the greatest ever in the history of the game, if you really want to look at shutdown corners.
Right.
You know, he understands. I've had conversations with Deion, and Deion is like, you know, I would never criticize a kicker because it's a lot like what I do, you know?
Yeah. Well, no one pays attention like the 25 snaps where, you know, Deion blanketed a guy and didn't give up a catch or wasn't targeted. But everyone gets on you, you know, when you give up the catch. You know, it's just like, oh, yeah, he got burned, you know. Oh, yeah, but what about the other 35 snaps where he didn't get burned, you know?
especially on TV as well, where the commentators are giving that theatrics, you know, they're setting the stage for this kick. And that means, you know, all eyes on this one kick. And yeah, I mean, but you make a great point. You know, kickers are.
I got to defend the guys, man.
Defend
the boys.
Because it's a fraternity.
You know, we're trying to pass the baton on to the next generation here. And if you really look at one position who's improved markedly, maybe more than any other position, you would have maybe the quarterback, just because the game has changed, it became a passing league. But the kicker really has improved from being in the low 60%, high 50% now to 91% is the leading guy. That is a phenomenal improvement. There's a couple of reasons why it's happened. You now have a designated long snapper. That's all he does. His job is to snap the ball 8 yards or 15 yards for a punt. That's a beautiful thing. Then now you don't have a backup quarterback. You probably have a punter holding for you, so you have time to work that. And, you know, the way they train now, used to be if you were a foreigner from a different country, you must be a kicker. Now it's all American-born guys, very few foreign products on that deal. So the evolution of kicking is real. You know, it started with the Gogolax soccer-style kicking. There were a few. Mark Mosley was actually the only kicker who's MVP of the league back in the 80s with the Washington football team when they were called something else. But
and we call something else next year too. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And then and then you have Jan Stenerud, who kind of modernized it. And then you have, you know, guys like myself, Gary Anderson, Jason Hansen, and now Vinatieri and Justin Tucker and a lot of guys, Matt Bryant, Falcons, obviously, and now the new kids, you know, who are continuing to you know, make this a weapon, you know, really a weapon where you have to pay attention. And if the purpose of the game is to score more points than the other team, which I believe it still is, correct me if I'm wrong.
As far as I know, yeah.
Then what position is more important than the person who scores more points than anybody on the team?
Yeah.
And there's nobody better to speak on that than yourself, who has the most points in NFL history.
Second. Adam got me.
Yeah, Adam just got it. And, I mean, speaking, you mentioned Jan Stenerud. You and him, the only kickers ever to go into the Hall of Fame. Must be a Scandinavian thing. He's from Norway. What was that moment like? What did it mean to you when you got that call that, you know, you were getting inducted into the Hall of Fame?
I think it was just validation that, you know, the work put in, 25 years of ownership, the journey was, and the gratitude. I mean, there's a lot of things going through your mind because you know, I was eligible after 5 years. Then I was a semifinalist my first year of eligibility, and then the next 4 years I spent as a finalist. And I don't know if you know the process, but you got to get 80% at each step of the way, and there's several rounds. It's a brutal process. It's about 48 voters. So you got to get almost 40 guys to vote in favor of you at each incremental voting stage. And it's a brutal process.
Yeah, yeah.
It is, and there's a gauntlet. I mean, there's a lot of guys who are deserving who has been waiting a lot longer than I did, and I, quite honestly, looking back at it, feel gratitude for the fact that I only waited 5 years. Lynn Swann waited 17 years.
Wow.
And you can, you know, Drew Pearson, who just got in, went in as a senior selection, and he was over 20.
I think Andre Reed waited 20 years.
Reed waited a long time, and so there's a lot of guys that. So I feel just tremendous gratitude and feel very privileged to be part of that. And it's a very unique place. It's a very unique room, and the guys all have a couple of very, you know, clear things to me in common, that they all came from difficult circumstances, but the sport and the stubbornness and the will and the willingness to do what others probably wouldn't be willing to do, the distasteful stuff, you know, the getting up at 4 or 5 in the morning and 2-a-days, 3-a-days and just grinding and understanding that this is, you know, really the plight. I mean, this is difficult.
Yeah.
And how badly do you really want it? You know, and if you want it bad enough, you know, you'll pretty much do anything to get there.
Yeah.
And so that's, you know, and it's not always, you know, hands above your head. It's the back against the wall in many circumstances.
Yeah.
Very disadvantaged beginnings and but great outcomes because of these traits that these great men, you know, exhibit.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so we have, you knew you couldn't get out of here without someone asking you about the Minnesota game. So we have a question from Corey Carter. Thank you, Corey, for the donation as well. He says, Morton, were you nervous going out for the Minnesota kick, or were you so focused that you didn't even think about it? Also, thank you so much for ending one of my favorite days watching football ever on a positive when it seemed like it was hopeless.
Well, thank you for the question. And, you know, I really feel this way looking back at it. It was a foregone conclusion. Once we got to overtime, you know, the ones that know me know I do a lot of mental rehearsals, training and so forth, visualization. And on a piece of paper, I had 38 left hard overtime to win the game. That was done Saturday night in a hotel. So I had rehearsed that kick. When it came, I didn't know it was going to be 38 left hash. Same kick that Gary Anderson missed in regulation.
Missed.
But call it divine intervention. I remember standing on the sideline and all my teammates were on their knees holding hands and praying. And I said, well, they're not driving the car. They don't understand that this thing's over.
Yeah.
And that's the truth. And we knew they were going to call timeout. And Coach Green did, and they called timeout. They just gave me more time to, you know, gave them more time to prolong the inevitable, but it gave us more time just to get out there and relax and take a couple of deep breaths and get my target line. And, you know, we were very fast. I had a great hold of Dan Straczynski. Adam Schreiber at the time was the long snapper, and we were fast. We were like 1-1-5 to 1-1-2-0, which is really fast snap to kick.
Yeah.
And you look at the film and everybody has seen it. I don't even look at the ball. If the goalpost had been 2 feet wide, it would have been still have been good. And I started running right away, turned around, and I knew we were going to the Super Bowls. It was pretty fun.
Yeah.
And then the guys came from the sideline, and it was pretty fun.
Yeah.
Was it the greatest moment of your career?
For sure. Yeah, absolutely the highlight.
Yeah.
Absolutely the highlight. It was mind-blowing to stand on stage with Terry Bradshaw and hoisting the trophy.
You said it was divine intervention to pretty much kick it from the same spot that Gary missed his. Did you have that feeling like this is meant to be? Because of the fact, like, you pretty much
didn't have the feeling until he missed. Well, when he missed, I said, well, this gives us an opportunity, you know. This gave us an opportunity to drive down, because we would have been down 10 if he had made it. With 4 minutes left or less than 4 minutes to go in regulation, that's a tall order against our team. But when he missed, I said, we need a score. And then Chandler threw an unbelievable pass to Terrence Mathis, yes, who ran a route in front of the safety and went down low and caught it on a kind of a comeback little curl in the middle. Mm-hmm. It was nasty. Mm-hmm. It was intuitive by Terrence, by T-Matt. And it was a great throw by Chan. And once we got that, you know, I had to make the extra point twice because they were offsides. I don't know if you guys remember that.
Yeah.
But they jumped offsides, and I had to kick the extra point twice to tie it.
Mm.
So I was probably more nervous on that extra point than the overtime field goal.
Yeah.
And then Jam, and we did our thing with Jamal in overtime, ran the ball, and kind of dinked and doinked our way. It was back and forth, really. It was only like 3-4 minutes left in overtime when we and this was the old school days when the overtime was what it was. You know, it's not what it is now. So first score win. You know, first score, you win.
First score,
done.
Yeah.
Drop the mic. We're out. See you later.
Yeah.
And they had banners. I remember as we're driving, and I remember seeing in the end zone banners, Minnesota Vikings, Super Bowl bound, and all these things, and kind of made me mad. And, you know, so when I kicked that thing through, man, the silence was deafening.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember as I was running, I turned back. saw this fan like ripping the banner off the the front of the stands, you know, because obviously that became a rally real fast.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Morton, you mentioned Gary's miss, and that Gary, up to that point, for those that don't know, had converted on every one of his kicks that season.
35 for 35.
35 for 35 and perfect on every extra point. The first ever kicker to go perfect in a season to try more than 20, and he tried 35. It was an all-time season ever for a kicker up to that point, and one of the all-time seasons ever. That was a shock that Vikings fans to this day still have nightmares of. What was the feeling on the sideline? It was new life for the Falcons, but was there a sense of, all right, he gave us this opportunity, it's a foregone conclusion that we're going to go out there and we're going to win this game now?
Much to the whole game. Pretty much, and it wasn't before the game we didn't think we could. We thought we could go up there and win. We just had to hang around, you know. Nobody gave us a chance, including you guys in Atlanta. Let's face it, no one in Atlanta thought we were going to win this football game. Very few, I would say. Let's just be honest about that. They were 15 and 1. They were a juggernaut, an offensive juggernaut. You had Randy Moss as a rookie. They were rolling, and they had pretty much cruised through the playoffs to this point. And they crushed Arizona the week before, I believe, and just absolutely annihilated them. We took care of San Francisco, pretty good team, in the Georgia Dome, you know. And so there's no question that when he missed, we felt the momentum shift. There was a clear shift of energy in that place, and we took advantage of it, and we stepped on it at that point. We put a good drive together. We scored. And I really think that it was an uppercut. It was a gut punch to them, and they were not able to recover. They had thrown everything at us. We had answered, and when that happened, the air went out of the balloon for sure on their sideline, and then we countered, and momentum was on our side going into the overtime, and we felt like we were going to win it. I really felt like their defense was deflated a little bit, and they didn't have an answer for what we gave them in overtime. We ran the ball effectively. We moved the ball, not necessarily on big explosive plays, but ball possession, you know, very methodically. They knew what was coming, and there was nothing they could do about it.
Yeah. That's great. Well, how are we doing on time, Morton? What's your situation?
I think I'm going to have to wrap it up.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah. Well, again, thank you so much for coming on, guys. Morton Anderson, legendary Falcons.
One last quick question, Morton. You probably get asked this all the time. If you had to go out there and kick right now for a team, could you do it?
No, I could not. I could certainly give it a shot, but it would, you know, it's not the way I want my legacy to be remembered.
Right.
Yeah. You would respectfully decline.
I prefer my last game to be remembered as being the oldest, by the way, the oldest player in the history of the game to be special teams player of the week against the Seattle Seahawks in 2007. I may have even been the beginning of 2008.
Wow.
Four field goals, 4 for 4, my best percentage year of my 25-year career. So I thought that was a pretty good place to stop.
Yeah, I think so. All right. Again, thank you so much, Morton.
Enjoyed it, guys.
Thank you, Morton.
We appreciate you.
Thank you so much, Morton. It was a pleasure.
Enjoy the season.
Yes.
Yes, sir.
You too.
Bye, guys. Bye.
See ya. Well, guys, that was Morton Anderson.
That was cool, man.
A terrific interview.
That was so awesome.
That was cool.
Like, I feel like I could just like sit and just like listen to him talk about football just for hours.
Yeah.
That's a lot. Is he the first Hall of Famer?
As a kicker?
No, I'm talking about that we've had on the show.
Yeah. No, we've had many, I think. Yeah.
I mean,
he's the first. Like, he's the first, right?
Other than Dave Choate,
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I'm just saying, like, that was the precedent we just set. You know, getting someone like Warner.
Look, I mean, we've had Hall of Famers on, so you know, no one's too good for us now.
Yeah, I mean, we got to get Matt Ryan next week. you know, talk about the game plan against the Eagles.
Evan.
I'm going to try. I think I got Claude Humphrey's number around here somewhere.
It's just around here somewhere.
You know, he has placed Claude Humphrey.
Pull out my Rolodex, of Hall of Famer numbers.
So he has to scroll down, you know, a lot, you know, down in the H's. You know, a lot of Hall of Famers ate the ref in there, too.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, Corey, it was obviously very cool to hear him talk about 98, and Evan and I both have like interviewed Morton separately. Every time you can get him to talk about that kick is amazing. He just has so many stories about
it. I love his confidence.
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah. It's insane.
What's funny is I just watched the SB Nation episode of the History of Atlanta Falcons. That particular episode the other night where they talked about that kick. They talked about that kick. And how they broke it down, and yeah, man, it was. I completely forgot that it was at the exact same spot that Gary did, and you know that was a moment in time that you know you as a Falcons fan, you know you won't forget. Of course, that was the high, one of the highs of you know the history of the Falcons at that point.
That was the high of the history of the Falcons.
As far as I take that back, not at that point, but in team history, that was definitely one of the highs there. And seeing him, you know, have 25 years as a kicker in the league, you know, and that's pretty incredible, man. That's pretty incredible.
It's very cool. Very cool.
What was it he said? If it was 2 feet wide, he still would have made it.
That kick went right down the, like, it was right down the chute.
Yeah.
There was no doubt about it.
Yeah. And he definitely did. I don't think he see the kick go through because he was halfway off the field.
That's what he said. He took off running the second he kicked it. He didn't wait. He just knew that it was going to go through. So that's pretty. It's pretty awesome. That's a good, always a great interview. Morton Anderson, a lot of fun. If we get him back on, I'll have to get him to tell you his some of his Jim Mora stories and how he was called the Matador because he like whiffed on a special teams tackle one time. So that's a good one for sure. So we'll have to get him to tell that one next time. But guys, appreciate everyone's questions. We'll keep. Yeah, if you guys have anything else to say about Morton, we can do that, and then we can wrap up our roster discussion before we sign off tonight.
Regarding that game in particular, it's just weird how football is sometimes where, you know, the Vikings, of course, that Vikings team was the best team in the league that year. Like, that team, without a doubt in my mind, would have won that Super Bowl. And if you ask anyone from Minnesota, they'll tell you the same thing. Like, to this day, that game is their boogeyman.
Some Vikings fans are still not over that.
My dad's a diehard. Like, we talk about it all the time.
Yeah.
Like, when you guys think, like, how awful everything is for us, like, my dad's been a fan since the 70s or something. Like, he's lived it. So it's naturally that me and him both suffer together.
Yeah, and that team's lost a lot of Super Bowls. Like, a lot of those old Super Bowls with the purple people eaters.
They lost four. Was it four? Yeah, four. Lost four Super Bowls.
Before I finish my thought, Evan, what was your dad's reaction when you told him that you were like interviewing Morton Anderson?
Oh, I texted him I took like a quick little screenshot and texted him. He's like, "Oh, that's awesome." He's happy and stuff, but he doesn't like to talk about that specific time.
Yeah,
we don't talk about that. Yeah,
yeah. I was just gonna say, like, it's unbelievable, and it almost did feel like divine intervention for the Falcons to win that. Just how good Gary Anderson was that year.
Yes, like, it's crazy.
He was like 125 of 125 on all of his kicks that season. Like, he was perfect, and then to miss a 38-yard chip shot.
Yeah.
Like, and you know, that game, of course, that would have, of course, put that game out of reach. The Vikings would have gone on to beat Denver in the Super Bowl that year. But it's just looking back on it, and you know, I didn't really live it. I was less than two at the time, so I wasn't like around. But just looking back at the history of it, and Eric mentioned the SB Nation documentary of the Falcons. it did a great job painting the picture. It's done a great job. That entire series has done a great job painting the picture of the entire franchise. It's really quality stuff, and I recommend everyone to check it out if you haven't yet. By Secret Base, that's the SB Nation plug here. But it really is just one of those moments you look back on, you're like, wow, like this actually went our way. Like in a franchise where nothing ever goes our way. Like that really went our way. It came at the expense of another franchise where almost nothing ever goes their way. And that's at the top of their list of stuff never going their way.
Yeah. And that was that Vikings team, you know, that easily one of the greatest offenses of all time. I mean, that was the greatest show on turf before the greatest show on turf. I mean, that was the Vikings team that had Randy as a rookie, Chris Carter, Jake Reed. And then, you know, they have Robert Smith back there. Like, that was a
job. Robert Smith was good back then,
yeah,
too.
Robert Smith really.
I think up to that point, that was statistically the greatest offense in history.
Yeah, it was. And that was – so that wasn't no pushover that they beat. And, again, 15-1. That was a 15-1 team. Like I said, Vikings fans are still not over that after all these years. They still kind of hold that over Falcons fans.
But they've brought us a lot of joy with how they've beat the Saints. So.
Yeah, I do appreciate that, certainly.
And to be honest, Atlanta had some get back after the 91 World Series of losing to Minnesota. Like, Minnesota had that coming that year.
All right. Well, I guess we should wrap up our roster talk. It's hard. Yeah, I know that Corey Carter said it's so hard to go back to now, that. Man. It's hard to go back to that now. Yeah.
Who wants to talk about the roster now?
Oh yeah, we can talk about how many cornerbacks are here. You know, I know that's why you guys are here. Definitely, you guys didn't care about more. You just wanted to hear us get into the nitty gritty of the 53rd person. On the
our viewers are going to go down to by half right now.
Let's see if I can think of anything else to mention. I know that we talked
about foresee them making a move
before the season. An additional move.
Yeah,
I
guess they claimed that guard.
That does not move the needle, man.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. Outside of that, I mean, let's be honest, man. I know from the coaching aspect, there's an upgrade, of course, with Dean Pees here. I'm really, really concerned about this edge group. I'm really concerned about it, and I don't have a whole lot of faith in it. Just even the little bit that we saw from the first and second team during the preseason, they're not really getting much of a push, man. And the only way they're able to get pressure is if they blitz. And to me, I know it's a scheme that's predicated off that, but again, there's going to be some times in the game where your guys got to beat their guys straight up, man up. And I don't think they have the horses for that. So do you guys think they're going to possibly make, address that somehow, maybe make a trade?
I'm actually
looking more at left guard, to be honest, because right now, left guard, it's Jalen Mayfield is a starter with Andrews going on short-term IR. He's going to be out for at least 3 weeks. I don't trust Jalen Mayfield to start at all, to be honest. I think he has potential. Don't get me wrong.
I mean, I think he's better than Josh Andrews, but that's
I mean, that's not saying much. But
it's not.
but it's that's such a hole. And, that was a hole the past few years with Carpenter. But Carpenter last year was at least, average.
He was fine last year.
I think Mayfield is going to be, and I hope I'm wrong, I think he's going to be a big downgrade from an average level starting left guard that James Carpenter was. I really hope, and they don't have much money right now. I'd allocate some funds toward looking at a left guard like a Nick Easton.
Yeah. He's a starter. He is, to me, he's a starter at this point. If they were to bring him in, he will be their best option at left guard.
Oh, easily.
Yeah. I mean, he's not a, he's not an elite guy. He probably would be an average starter, but he would definitely be their best option day one as soon as he walks in the door.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I agree. They don't have much money. So, we'll see if they can do anything here, really. Definitely it'd be interesting to see what
I definitely don't like who they're playing to start.
Jalen Mayfield versus Fletcher Cox. You don't want to see that matchup?
Oh, God.
Yeah, I think that's the big That's one of those matchups where Fletcher Cox can win it so decisively that it completely shifts the tide of the game.
And then was the very next week is Tampa, right?
Yeah, it's Vita Vea.
Not long after that, you got Dexter Lawrence and Leonard Williams. And then Daron Payne and John Allen are also on the slate to the first month of the season.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's going to be sink or swim for Jalen Mayfield. So, yeah, that one's rough.
We'll need to adjust some pressure to help him out on the left side.
Maybe they'll actually, you know, have a quick game. Unlike Dirk Cutter.
I don't think they'll have an option.
They'll need it.
Well, I just feel like Dirk Cutter just sort of refused to adapt his offense when the protection wouldn't hold up, and I'm hoping that Arthur Smith would be willing to do that. So, you know.
Arthur was very decisive when it came to the deep and intermediate passing game. Right? He didn't really rely on it. He used it effectively at certain times. You know, if you look back at their, you know, last year, when it came to deep passing, you know, they didn't do it a lot, but they were very effective when they did it. And a lot of it was predicated on play action. So to start the season, you know, I think he's smart enough to know, like, okay, we're going to have to try to modify that passing game. And let's just get the ball out of Matt's hands. And let's just find a way to get the ball into Pitt's hands quickly, or Calvin, or Gage.
Yeah, run that play that they ran, you know, this weekend. Just run that over and over again. Just let Kyle Pitts outrun the entire defense. Like,
why not? Why not?
A little dump off.
Anybody like watching that play? It was like, it was beautiful. It was only 27 yards.
Only, yeah.
But it was a beautiful 27 yards. It's like, wow. Like, wow, this is what it's like. This is the Kyle Pitts experience as he's streaking down the sideline untouched.
Just took this little tiny pass and destroyed their entire defense.
Shrugging off a defensive lineman and dragging a linebacker and a safety. This is beautiful. And probably if it was better blocked, he might have housed that. I don't know.
That's the thing with him. Like, a lot of tight ends, they don't house it if they get space, you know.
He ran into the back of his teammate. It was like, dude, you're in the way.
I'm not going to lie.
The teammate was like, oh, my God, yeah.
At first, I was furious he didn't get out of bounds. I was screaming, just get out of bounds, like, internally. It's a preseason game.
Yeah.
No,
that makes sense, but I did enjoy it. Yeah.
I was screaming, get off the field. That's enough.
Yeah,
I don't need to see anything
else.
I saw what I needed to see. Yep. Do not put him back in there.
Yep.
But that's the glimpse. That's the glimpse of what we have with him, man.
Yeah.
I wouldn't talk it up. People are already expecting, like, Mike Ditka rookie season on steroids at this point. I wouldn't feed into that right away. It definitely wouldn't be fair to him. Because right now, you asked the average Falcons fan, they're expecting Travis Kelce numbers.
No, not year one.
Well, it's funny. You see, Jamar Chase, you know, who is, like, struggling, you know, in his first camp. And then you see Kyle Pitts.
To Auden Tate.
Right, and you see, like, Kyle Pitts plays, like, one snap in an actual preseason game and just, like, dunks on an entire defense. And it's like, oh, okay. Well, now I know why the hype train is out of control, because of stuff like this.
Yeah, it's not helping me in my efforts to, like, calm it down at all. Like, especially since that's, like, the only play that we got. So now it's, like, just 2 weeks of, oh, like, how good can he be?
Yeah, exactly. The hype train's out of control. I mean, it was out of control before, but...
Like, nobody wants to hear a realistic, like, you know, 800 yards and like 7 or 8.
That would still be like a top five.
That would be a fantastic rookie season for a tight end. But it's like, people don't want to hear that.
I think that's probably year one for him. I would not. If there's something he may do that may be out of the ordinary, I wouldn't be surprised if he hits double digit touchdowns. But
yeah, no. I definitely think because of the way he'll be used, 700-800 yards. That's definitely in the realm of possibility. But you know, let's not expect 1,300 yards out there. Tight ends rarely ever hit that mark, no matter where they are.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Let's see. I was trying to see if there's any other. I guess Jason Spriggs beating Willie Beavers was kind of interesting to me. He definitely outplayed Willie Beavers, so that part wasn't surprising. But, you know, good for him for making it. Only two undrafted free agents made it. We talked about Felipe Franks already, but Dorian Etheridge, the linebacker, was the other one. And I thought he was very impressive.
Week one in the preseason made it for him. Like, he was that good.
Yeah, that's what was shocking, though. Yeah. In past years, when stuff like that happened, they just get cut.
Yeah. Yeah, like, Jonathan Celestin.
Actually, and, yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Jermaine Grace, they were like, oh, yeah, we don't care. Yeah, we don't care.
Bro, I remember a few years ago when J.D. McKissick, he had kick return touchdown while they were interviewing Arthur Blank. Then a few days later, they just, like, cut him. And I'm like, what the hell are you guys looking at?
Yeah, that was dumb. And, like, he's been, like, a good NFL player. Like, he's been, like, a number three running back at worst.
Yeah, I think he's, like, the running back, too, right now.
In Washington. Yeah. He got, like, plenty of snaps over there last year, too.
He caught, like, 50 passes. It was nuts. Like, and you just let this guy walk out the door for, like, who exactly? Like, nobody worth it, that's for sure. But, yeah. Let's see.
Oh, T.J. Green.
T.J. Green's interesting. Yeah, yeah.
He had a really good game.
They had him playing corner too, right? Is he listed as both?
He's listed as a DB, so I think that's like their designation for hybrid. Kind of both. Yeah, both he and Sheffield are listed as that. But I mean, Green makes a lot of sense as like a sort of a tight end sort of matchup player because he's 6'3", 220.
He gives you that Bleedy Ray Wilson type of vibe, right? Like he's just a big, long corner. And again, they had him out on the perimeter against Cleveland, and he fared quite well. I think he had like two or three pass breakups being targeted in the red zone. He played pretty well. I like what I saw from him.
Yeah, I think he actually is the most athletic player on the roster if you look at his RAS score. I think he's like a 99.8 percentile athlete. He ran like a 4.3 at 6'3", 215. So,
and he was what, a second round
pick? He was a second round pick. Yeah. Yep. I think Indy tried to move him to corner, and it didn't work out. So they ended up moving on, and then he played some safety and looked better. I think he's been on the Falcons like practice squad for the last year. So, other than that, I think we've basically covered all of the notable stuff. Josh Harris, the long snapper, was waived today. I know Evan, you might have, some insider information on that one.
without getting in trouble, he'll probably be back.
Probably. Nothing confirmed. It's definitely speculation, but I wouldn't worry too much. Yeah.
Evan Schefter.
Yeah, Evan Schefter. He is, our insider and director of guest personnel. So before we sign off, let me read off a $5 donation here from George Costanza. Thank you, George. We appreciate you, brother. He says, I expect Travis Kelce numbers from Kyle Pitts. I would love to see 75 catches for 1,200 and 10-plus touchdowns. Anything less than that is disappointing. I'm sure he's being sarcastic, but...
Are we sure? We are talking about George, who was being the Kyle Pitts.
I mean, that's true. I guess I don't want to put any words in his mouth. He might not be sarcastic. He was the one responsible for us drafting Kyle Pitts after all, so...
Yeah. George was the reason why we covered Kyle Pitts more than anyone else on the internet.
Kept bringing him up every episode.
Yeah, in the months leading up to the... I guarantee you, if there's like some way to measure how often Kyle Pitts was mentioned on any article or like shows, I guarantee you we'd be far and away number one in the pre-draft like hype beforehand.
Yeah. It was just constantly. And then George with another donation here. He says, also, I see you, Eric, finally getting hyped on the Pitts train. Join the revolution, my friend. Hall of Fame, baby.
he came to me every episode. George came to me every episode. We're talking defensive prospects, and he wants to talk about Kyle Pitts joining the Falcons.
Well, George showed us, man.
He did.
And whatever George says goes. So, we ended up shifting the talk to Kyle Pitts.
Right. Low key, George is the producer of the show.
Yeah, honest. The show benefactor.
Yeah. And Nico's right. He actually may be Kyle Pitts' agent.
Could be. Yeah. He definitely is responsible for him getting drafted by the Falcons. So. All right, guys. Well, I think that's about it for tonight. Again, thank you for watching. Please do like and subscribe.
Sorry, Kevin. I think George also asked something about Richie Grant in there as well.
Oh, yeah. Oh, can Richie Grant play guard? Not to my knowledge. Yeah.
I thought it was an actual question. I didn't finish reading it. I thought it was an actual question.
No, you're right. There was an extra part of the tip that I forgot to read. So that thank you for reminding me. No, I don't believe Richie Grant can play guard. He might have to he'd probably have to put on like 100 pounds at that point.
I know
George wanted Liam Eichenberg really bad as well. And the Falcons, you know, took Grant. So we'll see how that works. I think Eichenberg's going to start. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be a while before we know if Grant was the right decision or not. Especially if he's not starting immediately, but we shall see. But again, guys, thank you for watching. Please do like and subscribe if you haven't done that already. Check out the Patreon, patreon.com/falcoholiclive, for all those exclusive perks, all that great content there. And then get involved with the community Discord. That's there's a link to that in the show description. That starts to get real hopping now that we're in the season. And guys, next Wednesday will be the final show before real NFL football kicks off on Sunday. So get hyped. Week one is just around the corner.
And next week we'll be previewing week one, and it'll be like right there.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Yeah. I'm excited. I'm sure you guys are as well. Before we get out of here, I want to thank all my excellent co-hosts this evening. First of all, Eric Robinson. He is on Twitter @Eric_Robinson. Eric, I know you're working at ESPN now, but anything else you know you'd like to plug?
No, man. I don't have anything.
That's it. Yeah. Okay. Just remind us that you're working.
No big deal.
We also have with us Adnan Ikic. He is @SayWhichWay on Twitter. Adnan, anything that you're working on you'd like to plug?
That last article in the Greatest Moments series. It got lost in a shuffle because of all of the training camp stuff, but it'll get published one of these days.
That'll be the epic conclusion of that article, so definitely check that out, guys. And then finally, we have Director of Guest Personnel Evan Birchfield on Twitter @EvanBirchfield. Evan, anything that you'd like to plug?
Not off the top of my head. Just go to thefalcoholic.com. There's a ton of everything that's happened today, which has been kind of crazy, and everything going forward leading up to the first game next week. Follow the Instagram, @the_falcoholic. Like us on Facebook, and then like and subscribe to this channel. And you can find me on Twitter @EvanBirchfield. And that's about it.
Yeah, and keep up with the show. You never know when Evan may bring us Joe Montana.
Yeah. I mean, at this point, yeah, it could be any time now. It just kind of comes out of the blue. So definitely a big shout out to Evan for another great guest. He's living up to his illustrious title for sure.
Oh, and for those patrons in the fantasy, send me a trade.
Yeah, you're that desperate already.
He's on the block.
Anybody.
You hate your roster that much? No.
No, but I can't tell you who's for sale, because then you'll lowball me. So
I got
send
you.
Send me some trades.
Okay, I'll look at it, but I love my roster. I'm gonna poop on this league.
I like my roster. Yeah, whatever. Yeah, right.
You took the Tampa Bay defense in the 8th round. That's bold.
I always do that. Oh, every okay. that's been a fantasy strategy of mine
just
as long as I've been
one.
Playing.
Yeah,
because that's to me that's hitting points, especially if it's a defense that has a capable returning game. Like those are hitting
teams.
Points.
Yeah.
So I always draft defenses high.
Yeah, I always just stream because I feel like I just play the matchup. But yeah, I mean, I guess if you're gonna keep like one defense all year, that makes a lot of sense to just get the best one.
Yeah.
But especially if you don't like any of like the other options on the board at that time. But
it was kind of slim pickings after the first 4 or 5 rounds.
Yeah, it tends to do that, especially in 12 team. All right, guys. Yeah. Well, that's enough fantasy talk. We appreciate everyone for tuning in again. Thank you, guys. We will see you next Wednesday at 8:10 p.m. Eastern for our week one preview. And we'll be back to doing post games just a couple days after that. So until next time, guys, I'm Kevin Knight @FalcoholicKevin. If anyone's going to be at Dragon Con this weekend in Atlanta, I will be there as well. So, you know, hit me up. But yeah, other than that, guys, have a great night, great weekend, and we will see you next week. Have a good one, folks.